Okay, I have to say a huge thanks to you and that this podcast exists because of you. And the Mental Fitness Blueprint is the most personal thing I've ever created, so it felt right to offer it here first to all of you. The first 50 founding members will shape what this becomes. So if you want to be part of the first 50, details are in the show notes or at mchampagne.com. Who are you?
I'm the lady with the red glasses.
You are?
I mean, there are now a lot of other ladies with red glasses, so I guess I cannot completely corner the market, whereas, you know, maybe before. I'm your other pal with cool glasses. I feel like totally. That's how we initially bonded.
So true.
But what a great question to start with. Who am I? I'm quite tall, so that has not changed. I'm really embracing joy, and I'm being present with the moments. I'm at an age where there are not going to be forever of the fun, busy, zipping around, different things that I'm working on and having the energy for it. So I'm just savoring everything that I'm doing, and I'm trying to do it with intention. So I feel like right now I'm a joyful and intentional person. I also have been around long enough to see the patterns that emerge and continue to emerge, some of which you've surfaced in your blueprint, which was incredible. I didn't even know how you knew that and got into my head. So I'm able to see like, oh, cute, Julie, I see you doing that. You always do that, don't you? Oh, you always do that. Sometimes that works out. Mostly it doesn't. So maybe just skip it this time or not, or do it anyways, but you kind of know what's going to happen. And so I think I'm very aware of who I am in those patterns.
How does that feel, Julie, like just to be at that place in life? Because, I mean, I know you've had a lot of different chapters, of course, like many of us, and you're going through, you know, another new one, I guess you can say, in the overall, let's call it Julie's book of life. But just being at this place where, from what I'm picking up, it's like you're high up, like you're 30,000 feet up and zooming down. And it's not like those emotions are not there, or those, like you said, the patterns, but you just have a different perspective. Like, what does that actually feel like now? Because give us some hope for those of us who can't zoom out as fast as we'd like.
Well, it's a lot of different things that happened that got me here, right? It's like, of course, to your point, like different chapters. You know, I'm 51. I am now an empty nester, so my season of busy momness is past. Was what I am, a business owner, and I had been running a very sizable, very complicated business, and now I'm not. So I think I have the brain space to allow me to have that, and I had the experience of all those experiences that gave me all the all the content for me to go through those things so that I can see that now. But it feels good. It feels really good. And it feels very, it feels a little like wistful too. You know, you kind of wish that you were able to have had some of this perspective earlier on as well. But also, you know, you don't get there until you get there. So I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit of both, but mostly I feel just really grateful. I am now able to surround myself by people and work and opportunities that all feel really abundant. And that's also a privilege of having had this experience, so that I don't have to do a lot of the things I don't want to do.
Sure. I guess you can describe it as a privilege. I see that. But also, like, you've worked hard to get to this place. Like, let's not discredit that, right? Like, because I'm curious, if I were... had I interviewed you, let's say, I don't know, 20 years ago or so, that you would have been in probably the heart of one of your first big companies, right? How do you think you would have answered that question?
I was like such, I just had lunch with somebody and I was just describing myself as a recovering hustler.
Yes.
I am a recovering hustler. Yeah. I'm not recovered.
Sure.
But I'm definitely in recovery. Yeah. You know, I had big dreams, but I also didn't really, I wasn't convinced that I would be successful. You know, I didn't really have that belief in myself. I was a terrible student, Mark. I was like, I was asked to leave my high school. I
No
took
way.
math for 36 straight months because I'd fail and then I'd have to take it in the summer. And then I'd fail and then I'd take it in the summer and I'd fail. I had the same teacher, Mrs. Flenner, bless her heart, Joan Flenner. I had a huge crush on her son, Carl Flenner, shout out. But I was a terrible student and I was a delinquent. I didn't do sports. I'm like 6 feet tall and I never did sports. I smoked cigarettes behind the building and, snuck into bars. I mean, I was terrible.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a lot of hope for myself. So I don't know if I would have been like, oh no, she's definitely going to succeed, 20 years ago. But I think again, recovering hustler, like I just hustled and hustled. I always had a strong work ethic. So I think that's kind of what got me to the place that I got to.
Yeah. Why don't you just fill in a little bit of context for that, like what you were doing. And then I definitely want to spend a lot more time on the current chapter and also, just how you approach mentally, pivots and really going in on that next chapter. It's funny because, I mean, people don't know the backstory, so please, of course, share and so forth, but it's almost like the universe is playing a little bit of a trick on you. You mentioned all this stuff around education and here you are in the education system again and all of this kind of stuff, right? It's pretty funny.
It feels so I actually had coffee with my best friend from growing up and I was like, I'm a professor. She's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like the universe has plans, Mark.
Yeah.
Universe has plans and the universe has a sick sense of humor sometimes.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. So I think the reason why I was so terrible in school, I can look back at now, is because I actually was probably a bit bored. I didn't really understand why I would have to learn algebra when I could just hire a bookkeeper and an accountant, because why was I going to have to learn all this stuff? I also went to a very competitive high school. And I think because I have a kind of rebellious nature, I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to do that. I could, but I'm not going to. So I think I absolutely could have done fine academically. I maybe just wasn't in probably the right environment for me, which is fine. Back then, like, you didn't spend time discovering if your child had ADHD. Just like, I don't know, go to school and like come home. So there was probably a piece of that. And then both my parents were business owners. I'm an only child. Both my parents are only children. So I have no aunts and uncles,
That's why
cousins.
We get along so well.
Are you an only child too?
I am, yeah.
Oh my God. All my favorite entrepreneur people are only children. I would love to do research on that.
I was just going to say, we're just enough amount of freak to do that.
We're like, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
I didn't have anybody else to do it with. So I'm just going to do it by myself.
So true.
My God. Did you have a big imagination? I have a very big imagination.
I do. Yeah, and I think I still do. And it gets me in trouble sometimes, but for the most part, I really enjoy it. I mean, it's the thing that lights me up. And it's the phase of, and you mentioned the blueprint, and some people will know about it on the show, but like just thinking up what this mental fitness blueprint is, and like that stage is so exciting to me. I don't know.
Right? And it's so creative. And you had to, like, I had to make up my own whole world and my own imaginary friends and my own, you just were, back in the day, you'd just be in my room, like coming up with stuff and making things up. So I totally relate to that imagination and how that connects back to being an entrepreneur, because I think we see things before other people see them. We see things that do not exist because we didn't have to react to people. We just had our own worlds that we could live in, I think.
Yeah. It is interesting though, because so I grew up in an opposite environment. My parents were not entrepreneurs and they were kind of, stereotypical jobs. My mom worked at the bank. My dad was actually a miner. So it was like very, very different. I had family members that an uncle that comes to mind that was very much entrepreneurial and so forth. And I'd get like little hits of that and always just think, oh gosh, she's in the big city and so forth. And like, seems so exciting. I'm like, I just want to get stuck in that Toronto traffic, which is crazy now. Right. But
I want to go have lunch with my colleagues.
Totally. Totally. So for me, it took quite a bit of time. I mean, I spent well over a decade in the corporate world before kind of venturing out to do some of this stuff. And now it very much does feel like I'm in the right space, or it feels like this is the work that I'm meant to do. But I'm curious for you, like, did it just naturally feel, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do, since you were surrounded by this? And I guess, like, how did Eat Well Global even come up? Was that the big first kind of company for you?
Well, two things. One, both my parents were professional services business owners. So my dad started an accounting firm in 1972. Friedman and Eisenstein, my maiden name is Eisenstein, joined Raymer and Schwartz. So they were basically four Jewish accountants in Chicago. The company was Friedman, Eisenstein, Raymer and Schwartz. Does not get more of the drive than that.
It's a big business card.
Exactly. FERS was that was our license plate, was FERS. But, and he grew it to over 500 accountants and eventually sold it to H&R Block in 2001. But I started working there when I was in eighth grade, you know, like a receptionist and mail thing, whatever.
Yeah.
And my mom started a real estate company. So she was a real estate. So I always joke that, like, growing up, I knew that they were friends, I knew they were family, and I knew they were clients.
Yes.
And guess which was the most important of those three people?
Yes, I can guess for sure.
And, you know, I was like, from a very early age, I knew how important clients were. So I, you know, had no doubt I would go into some kind of professional services business. And because I saw, especially my mom, have a ton of flexibility just with her schedule, my first job was at a PR agency, you know, a big global PR agency. And I did great work and I loved it. But I thought, dear God, I have to come here every single day, all 5 days in a row. And, like, we were just here yesterday and we have to come again tomorrow. Like, I have things to do and I don't want to, you know. So at 24, I left and I worked on my own. I started my consulting firm as a 24-year-old. I don't know what I thought I was going to consult in, but, and my focus was in nutrition and communications. That was really my focus. But my first businesses were very consumer focused. I started a baby, sort of like a baby food company. That's a very challenging kind of work. I did a mommy wellness kind of counseling and courses and in a space in Brooklyn. And I did just like a wide variety of consumer facing things, but I really, my background had been in client service, right? That's like what I knew. And then I moved to China in 2009, the beginning of 2009, my husband's job took us to China. By then I was married. I had two daughters who were, 3 and 6 when we found out. We had 6 weeks from when we found out we were being moved to China to when we actually had to be in China. So we had to like rent out our house, and it was the middle of school year, find a school, like do all those things. And that was just a really game-changing time for me in terms of like tapping into my own inner resources, because I was very far from home. I didn't really love being an expat. I thought China was pretty cool, but like being an expat was not really my scene. And I started a business there called Eat Well Shanghai. That
I wanted to ask, because I'm looking at your LinkedIn now, and I was like, is that, why did that start first? I thought it was like a spinoff from the Eat Well Global, but
that was the first gig. So I was just like, okay, I am really struggling. What, you know, and of course, Mark, what do you do when you're struggling? You start a business. Like, you don't like go to therapy or ask for help. You're like, I will entrepreneur my way out of this funk. So I sat down and I typed out a guidebook. I wrote a guidebook literally just off the top of my head. And I found this lady to design it, and I found somebody else to print it, and then I sold copies of this book out of the back of my minivan, because our house in China came with a driver and a maid. And I was like, I don't need a driver and a maid, but do you know what I need? I need a sales team. So Xiao Feng and Mr. Wong became my sales team. My husband was like, I need the driver to drive me to this business meeting. I'm like, well, Mr. Wong is busy. He's got deliveries and him and Xiao Feng are out. You know, the laundry wasn't done. Nothing was happening. But these two were like my renegade sales team selling my book out of the back of the minivan all day. And I sold like 3,000 copies of this book.
Wow.
And then it was like a guidebook for people living in Shanghai. There was about 197,000 expats at that time. So anyways, what I loved about that is that it gave me something to do. And I also got to connect with some Chinese companies, which was really fun. Yeah. And they became my clients. And I would work for some international firms and they became my clients. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to start my own agency. And I started UL Global, and we were a professional services consulting firm, specialized agency working with the world's largest food companies in nutrition and sustainability strategy and communications. And that was my, you know, big business. And it came out of Xiaofeng and Mr. Wong in the back of the minivan.
I love that story. That's so good. So good. What did your parents say about all of this venture?
I think most people in my life are afraid when I say, wait, I have got such a good idea. No, you are going to love this. Yeah. You're going to be so, my husband's like, oh, dear God.
Yeah.
So I think my parents who were like in their time, right? It was like a big deal that they both, you know, that they both were, you know, entrepreneurial. But, you know, it was a very like kind of linear businesses that they ran, right? Like real professional services businesses. I was coming up with stuff that they're like, what even is that? Like,
yeah.
Well, where are you coming from? But I loved, you know, I love visualizing something and getting somebody to see what I see and getting them excited about it and me being able to convince them that it's really going to change something for them.
Yeah.
And so our clients from, you know, PepsiCo to Unilever to General Mills, Danone, et cetera, when I could see what kind of a transformation we could help them with from a huge corporate strategy standpoint, you know, this one little niche part of it, and they saw it too, and they were able to like say, actually, we want that. It was like the best.
Yeah, that's the fuel best. For sure. Yeah.
The best. Yeah. Yeah. So my parents think I was crazy, and they could never explain what I did.
Yeah. But they still, I mean, this is probably where our parents differ a little bit. My mom still doesn't know what I do and like can't, and you know, I, in her defense, can't necessarily directly relate. I think your parents probably could relate, but they didn't maybe fully understand the whole path, right? Which, I mean, there's no right path in this scenario. The key is they support us emotionally in some capacity, right?
Totally. And you know, my dad worked really hard. Like he, and this was of course before you had Wi-Fi at home or whatever, like he'd just be in his office tax season, you know, like for months and months and months. And I just knew how proud he was of me. And he read the Wall Street Journal religiously, Mark. Like this man did not, he'd save him for 2 weeks, but he would read every article. And when he was passing, it took him like 5 days from when we knew, you know, he was like fully on his way.
Yeah.
So we were there with him for 5 days, and I'd gotten Abbott became a client that week, and I got an MSA from Abbott that I had to review. So I actually read my 60-page MSA from Abbott to him as he was passing away.
Julie.
I had to read it anyway. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to read this aloud to him. And I thought, you know, I don't know if he can hear me or not, but I bet my dad is like really proud that I'm about to sign an MSA.
Sure, sure.
With Abbott, a big, giant global pharmaceutical company. And I thought, yeah, my dad would be really proud of me for that. I mean, we were there for a long time, so we talked about it.
Yeah, of course.
But, of course. Yeah, no, I think both my parents were super proud and a little confused.
Yeah, of course.
like yours.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. But it's better to be using these kind of powers we have, I think, in this way. There's a lot of ways we could be using these powers. And I think it's really good that we focus in on entrepreneurship, or at least I can just speak for myself.
No, I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah.
So during that era of your life, I mean, like I'm looking at LinkedIn and the timelines, 15 years. I mean, you're still part of the company, but it's been a recent shift where your board member, right? I believe now versus more operations and so forth, or like hands into the business like you've had for so many years. Of course, there have been really challenging periods during the life cycle of that organization. I'd love to just know, what were some of the fundamental strategies you had for your mind during, you know, that kind of work and just building a company from zero and so forth. And then we can get into, of course, pivoting into what you're doing now. I'm sure there are some overlap or some similarities, but also just even how you answered the who am I question, a lot of that has probably evolved as well. right?
Oh my God, totally. You ask such great questions, which of course is not surprising based on your book and everything. But yeah, that's a great question. And I love, I mean, I know the first time we met, I was like, fitness? I was like, what? Mind blown. Like literally, of course, joking, talking about mental fitness, your mind's blown. But like,
yes.
Really, it is such a great, it is an incredible concept, especially after being in the health space with physical fitness and all that as well. And yeah, how do you keep your mind? So I think what I realized and what you definitely surfaced in your blueprint for me is that I want to do a lot of things all at the same time. And yeah. The business that I was in is very niche and it's very specific and it's a very specific buyer and it's a very specific deliverable. And, you know, there are X number of large food companies. There's X numbers, you know, it's like, and so I think it took me a while to realize that I needed like a really wide variety of inputs for me to stay really on my game and stimulated. Like I need to be involved in a lot of different things.
Oh, interesting.
So I felt like there, I mean, it took us a good, so I have a phenomenal business partner, which is how I'm able to do, you know, I was able to step away. We were co-CEOs and then I had stepped into a chief commercial officer role for over a year before I stepped away from the business. So, you know, I really had, that was the number one good thing I did was pick a phenomenal business partner, Aaron Kappelhoff, who is the CEO. And, you know, that was a game changer. And I think it took us a little while to get our real traction. And so we'd already been about 5 or 6 years in the business before we really took off. And then the pandemic, we hired like 12 people in the pandemic. Like we supercharged.
Oh, okay.
I was already getting a little tired by then. And then we had like this huge business to run and the pandemic and so many changes that were happening that I probably could have stepped away earlier just from my own mental fitness. Like what I need to be successful is to be able to be dabbling in tons of different things. And I also really love business. I thought food was interesting. Nutrition, sustainability was interesting, but I am at the heart of like, I am the heart of, I'm a business person. And so yeah. I think being in an atmosphere around a lot of other business people is probably a really good fit for me, just for my mental fitness and to be challenged kind of in that way. So I think those were probably two things that were missing. One, it was like super focused on the one thing we were doing. I wasn't necessarily getting a lot of other stimulation. And then also like, I think just being around people with the business, you know, that the business mindset is like first and foremost, I think is where I kind of feel like my energy is best activated.
This is what I love about conversations like this, because this is, I mean, I don't think I've ever had anyone mention how almost being overstimulated with different topics and things going on and so forth, like that for you is the fuel and keeps the mind spinning in a good way. I mean, most people be like that's the challenge that they're trying to get away from in a way. And the reason I love it is because we're all unique, right? And there's no, I mean, that's what these blueprints are all about, but really any of the work that I'm trying to do in a corporate setting is just to, sure, I can share your practices or your story and others as inspiration and to get us thinking, but we just need to take some time to get to know ourselves and recognize the patterns and then, you know, set up a plan to support ourselves wherever we're at on that journey, right? Otherwise, we're going to hit some sort of wall at one point and be forced to think about this stuff, of course.
Yes. But,
I mean, that's kind of the universal or the joke by the universe again. I mean, either deal with it now with a mild discomfort because it's usually not something that we want to deal with, or get hit right in the side of the face hard. You know?
Or somebody said something like, oh, you know, don't worry about getting in touch with your feelings. I'll get in touch with you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So when you had to have that conversation with Aaron, was it hard to have that, to bring it up? Like what was helpful for you in that moment to get ready for a tough conversation?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm so grateful. She's an incredibly empathetic person. And I'd actually started another business, Augmenters, which is how you and I met, because you were on our podcast in 2020. Well, in 2021. So I actually was doing both businesses at the same time.
Yeah, I
was doing Eat Well Global and doing Augmenters. So I think just...
And pimping out my book.
Exactly. To Gail King, who I like...
Fingers crossed.
My God, she still may come back. She was really into it. I did my best. Mark. I really did. I was like, you got to read this. She's like, great. I love it. Handing her my copy of the book. I was like, damn, can I have an, like, if you're done, Gail, can you drop it back at my house? Here's my address. So actually I think meeting Jimmy, who is like an incredible entrepreneur, and kind of all of a sudden being like, oh wait, I don't have to only do this one thing. Like I can kind of, that really opened up my mind. So of course, Aaron knew that I was starting this other thing at the same time, and that was really kind of inspiring for me. And then, you know, I think the concept was, okay, Julie probably won't be here forever. Like there's more that I wanted to do. So it was a progression, which was, I think, really good. So we were able to kind of prep towards the end. I think I know I wished I could have been, you know, I think in terms of my mental fitness, like towards the end, I would say that I was not taking care of myself the best way that I needed to. I had this feeling of sort of like, go as hard as I can and try to, like, again, the recovering hustler, like sell. I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. I was traveling a lot. I just wasn't taking good care of myself. And so I think I probably should have either asked for help sooner or stepped back a little bit sooner. And so I think when the time came for the full transition, I wish I'd been in a little bit of a better place. But I think these are all the things we start to learn about ourselves. And, you know, I was never great at asking for help. I always felt like if I just did it more, then, you know, everything would be fine. Yeah, so
that's the only child
but
coming it,
but
out.
I again. Feel, but again, you know, I feel grateful that we had a really good team in place. And I think that's the one advice I give to any entrepreneur who's interested in my advice, is definitely get a team and get a team up and ready early. Do not depend on, you know, key people, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. So what was next? Like what, I guess, how did you get to the point of leaving completely? And then basically, you know, where you're at right now, which is there's big changes on the business front, but then also personally. I remember we caught up, you know, before we scheduled this, like, you know, been married for what, 29 years, I think.
Yes.
29 years.
27. Together 29 years. Yeah, 29 years.
So 29 years. Yes. And I mean, you're kind of doing a long distance relationship. You're like empty nester. It's like you're going full circle to, you know, back essentially. And but energized by a lot of this, right? And I'm sure it comes with its highs and lows, of course. I don't want to completely overgeneralize it. My point being is there's a lot of change or things that look a little bit different in your life personally and professionally. And I'm curious to see what some of that inner self-talk, or whether you're journaling, or like just to even step into that next chapter, like what did that prep look like for you to go here?
Yeah. You know, it's so fascinating. I think that there is something around this time where you've been doing something for quite some time and you feel like you need, you know, again, don't, you know, your feelings are going to get in touch with you. Like it became very clear something needed to change for me.
What was the final thing for you? Like what did get you to, okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, honestly, I got sober. I feel like that's like the thing that, you know, it's like, of course, the cliche, but I it's funny because so many people are like, you didn't drink that much. It's like, I actually really didn't, but it was just the feeling of knowing that like I was holding on to something that was not being useful to me and it was making things much worse for me. So I'd been sort of, you know, peripherally involved in 12 steps between different, you know, family members and things like that. And I thought, well, maybe I should just do this thing. And it gave me a real framework. I think, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about, you know, but I think for a lot of high performers, you feel like, oh, I don't need that. And then you get into it and you're like, oh, this is like so helpful for having community and having a framework for like helping you identify your crazy thoughts and all that. So that really, and I needed to just like get a hold of my like health and all that as well. So I took a month long break from Eat Well Global and just like got myself together. And so that's been like a 2-year journey. Yeah. It's almost 2 years. So in those 2 years, I was able to like identify a lot of patterns. Like I was saying at the beginning where it's like, I see you over there, Julie. I know what you're doing. You know, got those patterns. And you know, have so much more space for myself, and grace for myself, and be comfortable with like not having a direct path. You know, I felt a lot of shame about, and maybe you can relate to having started something and having a company and all that, and then leaving. It's like, well, what happened? You know, it's a small industry. I'm sure there's a gossipy, like, you know, oh, well, where'd she go or what happened? And, you know, being comfortable with like, yeah, this was just my path and this is where I'm at today. And now I'm doing something really different. And Mark, when there are green flags, there are green flags. And I had a slew of green flags that were pointing me in the direction of teaching undergrads entrepreneurship, which I would have never believed in a million billion years was going to be my path. But between the work I was doing with Augmenters, higher education was our client category. It happened, you know, right after I left EWOL Global, I happened to be sitting next to the head of the Entrepreneurship and Innovation Department from Northeastern University, which is like literally my perfect place to teach. She's like, we need somebody, you know, it's just like crazy. All these kind of green flags that have pointed me to, you know, feeling like this is a really great next chapter. And it's giving me a lot of that stimulation of like lots of different ideas and, you know, coming up with all different things and being around students is really invigorating. And yeah, I love it. So yeah, so I feel really grateful that I'm grateful that things got really bad. I wished I could have handled it a little bit better, but I'm really grateful that, and I say to anybody who has, I mean, anybody who's willing to listen to me, which I guess if I'm on a podcast, somebody
is. Yeah, we're all listening.
You are. That it's that like we all go through these things. You know, I think especially women, we want to be superhuman and perfect and handle everything perfectly and do everything exactly right. And, you know, sometimes we just don't, and that's okay. That's that what gives other people an excuse to be human.
Yeah.
Beyond the human.
Beyond totally. So how, because this is, I'm sure this is one of those patterns that it's not like these things just go away. I think we just do a better job in building our self-awareness muscles, and then we spot them, and maybe they have less of a hold in how we show up day in and day out, but they're, you know, they're often there. So for you, when you feel these patterns coming back up, what are some what are some mental resets for you? What works for you?
So for me, it's the like, it's this feeling that comes up from behind me of like, you have to close this deal with this person. This fear-based, like visceral, like I have to sell this thing to this person. Like, or even like I have to, I might not even have a proposal to them, but I get this feeling of like, close the deal, you know? Yeah. And it comes from like a deep, dark place. It's like fear of maybe not having enough or not being accepted or not what, you know? So the mental like mantra, Julie, blessed girl, calm the F down.
I love it.
Just all the time. That is like what I've been saying to myself here. Just calm the F down. And if it is for you, it will be for you. Like if you are supposed to do this thing, you will do this thing. And I think that has been the biggest mental shift for me, is because I had this voice that was like this, you know, more, but it definitely showed up mostly in like sales was really where it was coming from. Just this like, calm down, ground yourself, like it's going to be okay. And so I think that just like calm down. If it's meant to be for you, it'll be for you.
And then what do you do?
Take the next right action. Like you are doing all the things. If I know I'm doing all the things that would set me up for success in a situation, either it's going to happen or it's not. Mm-hmm. And me, you know, that like grinding, it does not help anything. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I think, you know, different circumstances on this side, but I even right now I'm being reminded of these patterns, you know, like kind of shifting into a new chapter myself. And it's like, we know all of these things. We've probably done a lot of work on this stuff. And this is coming up, I think, in the second book that I'm working on right now, which is ironically, I'm finishing the book and I'm physically at that phase as well, where it feels like, you know, I've done a spiral up and then now I'm like, oh, I'm about to do another spiral, but I'm at the bottom of it. Yes. And I'm like, I just got to trust. it's all good. There's a bunch of uncertainty here, but it doesn't, it, like, it's still so hard, you know? And it's, if, but I also find it quite the coincidence that I'm near writing the end of the book, and I'm at that in my journey as well. I'm like, okay, well, so what do I need here?
Yes. Right. It's so funny. The things that we like, the topics that we tackle are the topics that we care about, or that like, that are like core to us too at the same time. Yeah. And how do you kind of quiet that voice? Like, I'd love.
Well, I mean, this is a bit new, but this is, I mean, this links, obviously you saw a little bit of this from the blueprint when you had a couple of those ancient teachers reflect back some messaging and so forth. But the second book is, I have a council of people basically around the table. There's 14 ancient teachers from all walks of life. So I bring it directly to them. And I'm like, here's what's up. I will record a voice note to myself to capture it and get all the detail and so forth. And then I'll share it. And typically, like, no different than if we're sitting around at a dinner table and be like, anyone else like experience this at one point? The difference here is that you have like a samurai, and then you've got Maya Angelou, then you got a poet, and they all start jumping in with, yeah, I've been there too. And then it starts to mix. So thankfully, you start to get some advice and so forth. But at the end of the day, like, as I'm really reflecting on all of this, we just need the constant reminders.
Yes.
And, you know, there might be some subtle perspective shifts in how we're getting those reminders, but at the end of the day, they're kind of the same. Like, I just need the trust. And to your point, I know, you know, I'm taking the actions, and it's just a matter, like, just need to trust and take another step, then another step. Like, that's not, it's not new to me. But it's new to me right now, I guess, when different things are happening and so forth. And even in your share, it's like you need to you constantly need the reminders, like, okay, there's the push from behind, and like, hold on a second.
Yes, it's like,
calm me up down here. Yeah,
I see you. Like, all right, you're good. Like, you're good. And I think there's two things. There's two kind of tools that I find really helpful. One is really mapping. I'm a huge journaler. I think we kind of talked about that right at the beginning when we first met. Like, and I have illegible handwriting, illegible. So I can go back and be like, pages, but I can't even recognize one word. I have no idea what I said. Yeah. So it doesn't really matter, like, going back to it. But I do these kind of heat maps of like times when things worked out, you know, like, let's actually document times when things worked out the best way possible. And let's document times when they, like, you know, there's almost nothing that didn't happen that should have happened. You know what I mean? Like, there's everything that didn't happen was for a reason. And so like, when you map it out, you can like see that, of course, if there's something that isn't for you, it's not gonna, you know, it isn't. And the other thing that's actually kind of a 12-step thing is a fear inventory. So you kind of like draft, you know, I'm afraid that my business is going to fail.
Yeah.
Or I'm afraid I'm going to go bankrupt, right? It's like, I have a $10 million business. I'm afraid I'm going to go bankrupt. Okay. What are all the things that would have to happen between today and you going bankrupt?
Like
that would mean that you would have to like stop calling all your clients. Every single one of your clients would stop. Everybody would cancel their contract. Like, you know, all these things that would get you to where that would happen. And then like, where can you trust that that like won't happen? And like, what steps are you taking that so that won't happen? Which is, you email back your clients, you call your clients, you ask your clients how the project is going, you know, like all these things.
You can plan together.
Yeah. Actual actions that you take that would prevent that. Or, you know, my spouse is going to leave me. It's like, okay, well, here's a laundry list of things that would have to happen before they actually pack their bag and walk out the door. You know, like, things happen, but in general, like, so my kids aren't going to talk to me. It's like, okay, well, and what are you doing to prevent that? Well, you're asking them how they're doing or asking for feedback or whatever it is. So sometimes that's helpful because it's very easy to get to this. Like, I have a very brilliant, really close friend who's this phenomenal woman. And she always jokes that, like, you know, the one step between they didn't accept my proposal and I'm living under a bridge.
What's...
And woman, like, it's like,
if so true.
This woman is like, you know, it's going to be a very, very, it will be many lifetimes before she's living under a bridge, but she feels it. She still feels it, you know, and I do too sometimes. And it's like, okay, where's that coming from? And is that realistic? What would have to happen for you to be living under a bridge?
It is wild though. I've used this language before where it's like, we're all like New York Times bestselling authors with the stories in our minds, because you're right, they feel so real.
And true crime podcasts, they're all true crime podcasts.
It's so true. And like, I'm that's kind of where I'm at right now, like just working on some of these different businesses and thinking like, if it doesn't work, like, you know, it, to your point, you go right to like, I'm going to be done. But you quickly forget, like, even a short time ago, I'm miles ahead, even where I can actually take some of these chances and there's a buffer in the business and like to handle some of this kind of stuff. Where I'm like, not long ago, that didn't even exist. And I think there's that too. We forget about the progress that we've made. Like, don't forget about like how hard you've worked, but then also like where you're at and now where you're current. That's what I mean by kind of the spiral upwards. And I'm not making that up. That's coming from this council where they continue to remind me, like, it's not a straight line down or up or, you know, across the horizon. It spirals in a way, right? So.
And you know, the other thing I learned too, Mark, that's so true, is that I also realized like everybody has these dips and the ups. And if they are not sharing that with you, it is because for whatever reason, they're not sharing it with you, not because that has not happened. You know, sometimes you hear people, and especially at like, you know, networking events, and everybody's very puffed up, you know, even on podcasts, right? People are all like, well, then I did this and then I, you know, or like whatever. And then you're just like, oh my God, did they not? No, they, you know.
Yeah.
They're probably just not talking about it. And that's hard to put up that front, you know?
Yeah.
So I think just remembering everybody has these stories.
Yeah.
Everybody has these stories. They might not want to share it, and that's fine. But like, nobody has had a straight path. And if they say they have, they're probably not being
vastly lying.
Yes, they are actually just lying. Yeah.
What are you learning from the students in your class?
I love my students. I think, so Northeastern University, if you're not familiar with it, is a school in Boston, and all of our students are required to do, well, I think they're all required actually to do 2 6-month co-ops. So they work in a business, they work at a job for 6 months, 2 times in 4 years. So they have this incredible perspective. I just met with a student today who is graduating, and he spent 6 months working for a big liquor brand. I think it was in marketing, and then he spent 6 months working in a supply chain department for a pharmaceutical company. So, and now he wants to go into something else completely. So like, I am learning from these students what it feels like to be 19 years old working in a giant business, and then like kind of what bullshit.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear.
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
but like what bullshit like corporate America is, but also like the fact that they have kind of accepted the fact that they have to accept the fact that this is their future. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm learning a lot about, I'm just learning a lot about our future generation and like what they care about and what they're willing to accept. I think I was much more idealistic at their age. I think they're pretty jaded, and they've kind of had to be. Oh yeah. I've learned a lot about like, I guess to a certain extent, kind of resilience and just like acceptance of like, yep, this is the system. This is what we're doing. But I'm teaching social enterprise. So that's fun too, because I'm helping them connect impact with business. And I've had some like serious, you know, finance ride or die kids who didn't even know that this class social enterprise was about impact. I think they thought it was like about being social or social media. I don't even know if they understood what the class was about.
When are we going to talk about Instagram?
Are we going to talk about just being social? Yeah. And I've gotten notes that are like, I took a sustainability co-op. I'm working for an ESG fund because of your class and because of what you taught us. And I never would have thought I would have done that. So I feel like if I can make an impact with these students, you know, that is like, and you know, they're go-getters. So it's been great. Yeah. And I've learned a lot about setting boundaries, because you have to with undergrads. If they say their paper is going to be late and they give you a reason why, you have to be very clear that you told them when it was due. You know, like you can't make exceptions, because then everybody wants an exception. So, you know, with That's your true. Team as a boss, there's more, they have, employees have more leverage because they could leave or they could whatever. So with these students, it's like, sorry, you failed. And like, this is what you did to fail this assignment. And sorry, you know?
Yeah.
So the boundaries have been good, learning that part as well. So it's fun.
And what about you? Like, just, I mean, you're holding space for a lot of people, students in this case. I'm assuming there's some overlap with, you know, obviously when you're leading teams within, you know, corporations and so forth in your own company. But probably some differences as well. I don't know, might hit a little bit differently in the sense, like, so I guess my question is around, how do you kind of clear out some of that energy for you so that it doesn't start affecting your own mind?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I have kids at that age. I have a daughter who's just about to turn 21. I have a daughter who's 23. So I also have, you know, young women entering the world, and one's working and one's trying to figure out what they want to do. So in terms, I think, you know, just compared to the stress of having so many people's salaries dependent on, like, this is nothing, you know, like, this is easy. I mean, they give me the roster of students. I don't have to go find them and sell them and pitch them and get their parents to give me the money. And I have to talk to the procurement department and the whatever, like, I don't know. They're true. Like, here's your students. I'm like, they just came. Yeah. They're all coming.
Are you sure?
Okay. All right. Great. So I think everything's relative, right? Compared you know, other jobs, this might seem stressful, but it's easy. And I also do a lot of consulting work too now. So I do go-to-market strategy and sales coaching with businesses. So I really try to save holding space for my clients, you know, to really be able to support them on growing their businesses in a sustainable, you know, way that, like, really fits for them for the size of their business. So that is kind of my additional area that I feel like I really want to make sure I can, you know, continue to hold space for them too.
Yeah.
And I find people fascinating, like you do. Like, my students are so interesting. My clients are so interesting. You know, I think I can really just get excited about what they're excited about. And my work now is just really helping other people grow.
Yeah. Which, I mean, how great is that? It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It's amazing.
What last question for you, as we're blown through time so fast here.
Yeah.
What do you feel that you need most to support this next chapter that you're in your life?
I need more time playing pickleball. I need more pickleball, and I need Mark to you to guarantee that I am going to have great knees for a very long time so I can play pickleball forever. I love pickleball.
Was pickleball
I've never
for
played
you?
A sport. Like I said, I'm almost 6 feet tall. I never played a sport in my entire life. And I started playing about a year ago, and I love it. And that brings me a ton of joy. And it's super social and it's super fun. And it's kind of sport that you can be kind of good at it, like, enough that, you know, you feel some days like you're quite the baller, literally. Yeah. I think just like that joy of doing something really fun like that. I haven't really had a hobby before that did not generate income. I have not had a hobby.
Yet, I'm sure it's coming with pickleball. You're going to own a whole pickleball facility soon enough. I'm
That's
sure it's happening.
He does now. That's what Jimmy got to do that.
That's
exactly. SOS Pickleball in Baltimore, shout out. So if you're ever in the area. Do you play pickleball?
I mean, I've played it. I wouldn't say I play it consistently, but I do like it. Same, you're on the East Coast, winter over here. So for me, it's skiing and snowboarding, and then it switches to mountain biking on this side of the world, at least.
Well, I will pray for good knees for you for
I do
skiing
need that
and
that.
Snowboarding. And no, you know, because you want to be able to do it for a really long time.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Hopefully for all those things. So yeah, I think more fun things like that, more good times.
I lied. Last question. So what's making you smile these days?
Well, you, Mark.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I'll take
that. I mean, getting to spend an hour talking about myself is pretty great. What makes me smile these days? Wow. Yeah. Like, a lot of things. I think, you know, what's really making me smile is seeing my, you know, I raised my kids in a community in Brooklyn of kids that were, you know, I just knew them all from when they were little, and to see them now, and it makes me smile. One of my best friend's son is the lead singer of a band called Geese. His name is Cameron Winter. If you have not heard of them, they were on SNL. I mean, they're like blown up and nicest kid you could ever guess. And that's just one. I have another friend whose kid is like on the news in Washington, D.C. And my, you know, just to see these kids who I knew since when they were babies, and you have kids, like, you know, this, like, babies that are these incredible grown up humans doing these really cool things in the world. And that makes me smile so much to see like the impact that these little people have made. Yeah. And I guess my students too, like seeing
You have another version of that now.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know them all as babies, so it's a little bit harder to have the context, but, I know them at least for a semester, but yeah, to see this sort of next generation of people like making an impact makes me smile, makes me so happy. Yeah. And being in life, you know, the world's hard and there's still a lot of joy. So
I feel that from you too. And Julie, I mean, on behalf of all of us, thank you for taking the time to spend, you know, this hour with all of us and share some of your journey and insight and wisdom and so forth. But I think a higher thank you for you just being you and like your personality and character and energy is really infectious. Like I feel energized after this conversation and I'm sure everyone listening can feel that. Like it's just, it's a beautiful character trait that you have, that just the ripple effect of that, and especially knowing that you're teaching others, especially in the business community, like for people to be able to learn from someone like you is a real gift. So thank you. Thank you for what you do.
And I thank you for everything, for your podcast and for this incredible tool, which I, again, couldn't believe how much insight you gathered from me in a very short amount of information. So I'm really excited to see how others are going to be able to use that language. You know, I think your mental fitness like really brings a unique perspective to it that has a deep aspect to it, but it also has a very practical aspect to it. And I think that appeals to a lot of people. So I am very grateful that I know you and the work that you're doing as well. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Love Fest.
Here we are. Double high fives for that. Ooh. All right.